Coming up on the show today, the U.S. urges Israel to protect civilians in Gaza.
What we are providing to Israel is subject to the laws of war and to the requirements that steps be taken to protect innocent life.
Plus, Egypt's president warns against allowing the conflict to spill over its border.
Sisi also warned that any further expansion of the conflict is not in the interest of the region. He underscored it is like a time bomb that could destroy all.
And later, western Mexico is reeling from Hurricane Otis, and Spider-Man, or Spider-Men, and lots of them, in Buenos Aires. Today is Monday, October 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. We'll take a look in a little bit how the turmoil in the Middle East is affecting America's relationship with China. But now, the latest on the conflict. Israel is expanding air and ground operations on Gaza, striking dozens of underground tunnels, bunkers, and telecommunications equipment. To Israel's north, Lebanon's Hezbollah said on Sunday that it shot down an Israeli drone over southern Lebanon with a surface-to-air missile. It's the first time Hezbollah has demonstrated such a capability. Israel's military, which claimed more strikes on Sunday on what it describes as Hezbollah targets, did not comment. Also, fearing a growing regional conflict, Israel's neighbor to the east and staunch U.S. ally Jordan has asked the U.S. to deploy Patriot air defense missiles there. Meanwhile, as Israel intensifies its strikes against Hamas in Gaza, on Sunday, the Israel Defense Force reiterated its warning for civilians there to evacuate to the south, saying the need is now urgent. The United Nations warned on Sunday that civil order is starting to collapse in Gaza, this after thousands of people ransacked its food warehouses there, taking wheat, flour, and other supplies. As the death toll rises in Gaza, the Biden administration warned Israel on Sunday that it must protect civilian lives. All this, as a military expert warned, that Tel Aviv's mission to destroy Hamas could prove almost impossible. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the details.
Israel Defense Forces underscored Sunday that the militant group Hamas, and not the people of Gaza, is the target of their military operations, which have now been expanded. But as more reports and footage emerge showing extensive damage in civilian areas, Israel's approach and the support the United States is giving it continues to receive scrutiny. Appearing on ABC's This Week, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan reaffirmed the U.S. position on the matter.
What we are providing to Israel is subject to the laws of war and to the requirements that steps be taken to protect innocent life. Those are requirements we impose any time we transfer weapons to another country.
Some relatives of the hostages taken by Hamas during its October 7th terror attack on Israel have expressed worries that the ground offensive could put those kidnapped at risk. But Sullivan added that there are several ongoing efforts to get them home safely.
We are prepared to support humanitarian pauses so that hostages can get out safely, and we will keep working at that every day.
The war to destroy Hamas was deemed a, quote, nearly impossible mission that could take months, according to retired Army General Robert Abrams, who also granted an interview to ABC.
The defense that Hamas will put up in that very dense urban terrain, unlike anything that we've seen in recent years, is going to require some very fierce fighting, and simultaneously trying to ensure that the Israelis do not target unwittingly the locations of the hostages.
General Abrams also elaborated on the matters that would need to be addressed after the military conflict comes to an end.
Hamas was created as a result of a lack of a separate Palestinian state, a two-state solution, as many people have talked about. That has to be somewhere, when you ask, how does this end? That has to be part of the equation.
In the meantime, the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees voiced worries Sunday that people storming its Gaza aid warehouses is a sign that civil order is starting to break down. The warning came as Pope Francis renewed calls for a ceasefire in Gaza and the release of the hostages, many of whom are believed to have dual nationalities. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Meanwhile, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Saturday, Israel will destroy the enemy above ground and below ground, as the war entered what he's calling its second phase. Reuters' Angela Johnston has more.
Israel is now in its second phase of the Gaza war, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Saturday, adding that forces are carrying out ground operations against Hamas militants. The war inside the Gaza Strip will be difficult and long, and we are prepared for it, he said. Netanyahu once again called on Palestinian civilians to leave the northern Gaza Strip, the focus of Israel's attack. Israel has tightened its blockade on Gaza and bombarded it for 3 weeks now. People are isolated, with a telephone and internet blackout that began on Friday. Many buildings there have been reduced to rubble. People are scrambling for food, water, fuel, and medicine. Gaza health authorities say over 7,500 Palestinians have been killed in the campaign. On October 7th, an assault by Hamas killed 1,400 Israelis in the deadliest day of the nation's 75-year history. Meanwhile, there has been growing concern internationally over the toll from the bombing in Gaza and calls for a pause to let aid get to civilians. Here's UN Human Rights Chief Volker Türk.
I am raising alarm about the possibly catastrophic consequences of large-scale ground operations in Gaza and the potential for thousands more civilians to die. Continued violence is not the answer.
Also on Saturday, Netanyahu met with families of Israelis being held hostage in Gaza by Hamas, vowing to exhaust every possibility to bring the more than 200 of them home.
That's Reuters' Angela Johnston reporting for us. A top Hamas official on Sunday called on Egypt to take decisive action to speed up aid to Gaza amid criticism over the pace of vital supplies reaching the war-torn Palestinian territory. Egypt should not remain a spectator, Hamas Politburo member Musa Abu Marzouk said. We expect a decisive stance by Egypt allowing aid to enter Gaza as soon as possible. Gaza is suffering critical shortages of food, water, medicine, and fuel that aid agencies have warned could cause deaths. Dire though the situation may be, Egypt's president Abdel Fattah el-Sisi seems reluctant to get more involved and is warning against the conflict in Gaza growing beyond its borders, calling the entire region a ticking time bomb. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Lebanon's Hezbollah militant group fired a surface-to-air missile at an Israeli drone along the Israeli-Lebanese border Saturday amid sporadic missile and rocket exchanges that have left many Lebanese worried that a war could erupt between Israel and Lebanon. After several apparent drone and rocket attacks along Egypt's northern border Friday, which left a number of people wounded, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi warned Saturday against expanding the nearly three-week-old Gaza conflict to other parts of the region, including Egypt. He says that drones entered Egyptian territory from Yemen Friday and were shot down. Sisi also warned that any further expansion of the conflict is not in the interest of the region. He underscored it is like a time bomb that could destroy all. He noted Egypt is a sovereign nation and asks everyone to respect its sovereignty and position on the map. Yemen's Houthi militia group, which controls much of northern Yemen and a coastline along the Red Sea, is an ally of both Iran and Lebanon's Hezbollah. It has used Iranian-supplied drones to attack other cities inside neighboring Saudi Arabia in the past. This is the first report of Houthi drones attacking Egypt. As Israeli attacks intensify against the pro-Iranian Hamas militia that controls Gaza, Iranian Foreign Minister Hussein Amir Abdollahian warned Saturday that groups which are Iran's allies are prepared to act if the war in Gaza continues. He added that Iran's allies have enough rockets, missiles, and drones that they can access as the need arises. Amir Abdollahian threatened Israel, saying the continued killing of women and children and civilians in Gaza and the West Bank will open the door to what he called a variety of options and that anything is possible. He noted Iran's allies are trained and ready to move forward if need be. Amir Abdollahian also called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and noted that UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is traveling to the region in the coming hours to try and find a political solution. Khatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, tells VOA that Egypt and other regional countries are increasingly concerned about their own national security, given both internal and external threats like Friday's attacks on the northern Sinai. Abu Diab says the attacks on Egypt may have been from Yemen or from the other side of the Egyptian border, but they are a threat to the country's security, and Egypt, like other regional states, is worried this conflict could spill over onto their own soil and threaten both their borders and their internal stability. Abu Diab points out that Egypt controlled the Gaza Strip from 1948 to 1967 and has had to deal with Islamic extremism from both Gaza and the northern Sinai for a long time. Egypt, he says, is prepared to stop any transfer of Palestinians to the Sinai to protect its own security. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV reported Saturday that a third convoy of aid trucks was prepared to enter Gaza to help the civilian population. It was not clear what supplies the convoy was carrying. President Sisi said Saturday that Egypt was working to facilitate the movement of the convoy into Gaza. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
And here are other stories we're following from around the world. Authorities in Bangladesh detained a key opposition figure from the Bangladesh Nationalist Party, which called for a nationwide strike on Sunday, following a day of violent clashes with security forces. Media reports said at least three civilians died in the violence, which included an arson attack in the nation's capital, Dhaka. At least one police officer was killed and scores injured on Saturday when a massive rally by tens of thousands of opposition activists turned violent. The opposition is demanding the resignation of the prime minister. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz met with Nigerian President Bola Tinubu on Sunday as part of a West Africa tour as the European country looks to diversify its trade partners and expand economic partnerships in the energy-rich region. And the United Auto Workers Union has widened its strike against General Motors. It's the lone holdout among the three Detroit automakers after having reached a tentative agreement with the Jeep maker Stellantis. The escalated walkout began Saturday evening in Tennessee at GM's largest plant in North America, just hours after the Stellantis deal was reached. Tennessee's nearly 4,000 workers join about 14,000 already striking at GM factories in Texas, Michigan, and Missouri. We heard earlier how the United Nations warned that civil order was deteriorating in Gaza as people ransacked UN warehouses for food and supplies. Something similar is happening in Mexico, showing that desperation can force people to do things they might not ordinarily do. In the resort town of Acapulco, there's been a scramble for basic supplies in the days since Hurricane Otis slammed ashore. The strength of the storm caught forecasters by surprise, and area residents now seek food, fuel, and water to survive. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Police arrive at a gas station in Acapulco, Mexico, at the scene of reported looting. Residents of this resort town screaming back at police as one man chants, "We are not stealing," We want gas, you are the robbers. The lack of basic needs follows the landfall of Hurricane Otis last week. In just 12 hours' time, Otis more than doubled strength from 113 to 257 kilometers per hour. Otis ultimately peaked at the strongest hurricane classification as a Category 5 storm, a hurricane with intensity that caught forecasters by surprise. National Hurricane Center Director Michael Brennan says that was because the storm found a much more favorable environment than anticipated, in part due to warmer waters, a result of climate change, and winds moving at just the right altitude and direction. The storm's damage created a desperate situation for many living in Acapulco. Scenes of widespread looting, from bare essentials like food and diapers to higher-end items like flat-screen TVs. Addressing reporters on Friday, Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador said nature the creator protected Mexico despite the hurricane's fury, adding fatalities appeared to be not so many. As of Sunday morning, the death toll is 39. For its part, the Mexican government responded by deploying the military to serve meals while medical personnel deliver care for makeshift clinics. Forecasters say the East Pacific lacks much of the hurricane-predicting infrastructure seen around the Atlantic coast of the United States. They say without buoys, robust land observation, and radars along the coast, they rely almost exclusively on satellite imagery, saying that leaves them with a jigsaw puzzle and only 10% of the pieces. For those living in a hurricane's path, that means little warning of what's to come. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
From Washington, it's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. 1,000 Spider-Men in Argentina. That story coming up in a moment. But first, turmoil in the Middle East is only adding stress to the U.S.-China relationship. In fact, the U.S. and China stopped just short of announcing the anticipated meeting between U.S. President Joe Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping in November on the margins of the Asia-Pacific Cooperation Summit in San Francisco. This, according to two senior U.S. officials. The word came after Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi this week held talks with senior U.S. officials in Washington aimed at stabilizing bilateral ties. VOA's State Department Bureau Chief Nike Ching has more.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken held talks with Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi in Washington, the first such face-to-face dialogue in recent years. On Friday, U.S. President Joe Biden met with Wang to underscore the need to manage U.S.-China competition responsibly. Officials from the two countries discussed a range of issues, including Israel's war with Hamas, Russia's war on Ukraine, the fentanyl crisis, and the South China Sea. Washington has called on China to use its influence over Iran to prevent a Middle East escalation. Matthew Miller is State Department spokesperson.
We know China has relationships with a number of countries in the region, and we would urge them to use those relationships, the lines of communications they have, to urge calm and stability. We don't think that increased stability benefits the United States. It doesn't benefit China. It certainly doesn't benefit the people of the region.
For his part, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang said China is willing to cooperate with the United States to manage differences.
China and the United States need to have dialogue. Not only should we resume dialogue, the dialogue should be in-depth and comprehensive, so that with dialogue we can increase mutual understanding, reduce misunderstanding and misjudgment.
But some U.S. lawmakers question China's continuing alignment with Russia and Iran. Congressman Mike Gallagher is a Wisconsin Republican who chairs the House Select Committee on Strategic Competition between the U.S. and the Chinese Communist Party.
It should be a wake-up call to the West. Increasingly, it looks like we have an axis of authoritarian powers that are arrayed against our interests and those of our allies. China is the dominant player in this partnership. Vladimir Putin is a junior partner. But increasingly, there's collaboration with Iran.
During the talks with Wang, Biden and Blinken also expressed condolences on the passing of China's former Premier Li Keqiang, who died earlier on Friday. Nike Chin, VOA News, Washington.
And finally today, just in time for Halloween, some 1,000 people gathered in Buenos Aires on Sunday dressed as Spider-Man, aiming to break a world record for the most people dressed as the famous superhero in a single public event. Argentine influencer Uki Dean organized the gathering via Instagram, aiming to outdo an event in June in Malaysia where 685 people showed up dressed as Spider-Man. Dean said he was confident of obtaining the Guinness World Record title with turnout in Buenos Aires at the famous Obelisk Monument, where the crowd was a sea of skin-tight blue costumes and red masks. The organizers had participants provide signatures and have their photo taken as documentation to provide for the record-keeping group. And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Trilateral relations among Japan, the Republic of Korea, the ROK, and the United States have been strengthening, as was evidenced by this summer's trilateral summit at Camp David. One area where the three nations share a long-time understanding and are fully aligned is the threat posed by the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, the DPRK, particularly its illicit nuclear and ballistic missile programs. But another threat has emerged in recent months, the DPRK's provision of arms to Russia that are used in Putin's brutal and all-out invasion of Ukraine. On October 25th, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, Japanese Foreign Minister Kamikawa Yoko, and ROK Foreign Minister Park Jin issued a joint statement in which they strongly condemned the provision of military equipment and munitions by the Democratic People's Republic of Korea to the Russian Federation for use against the government and people of Ukraine. Such weapons deliveries, several of which we now confirm have been completed, will significantly increase the human toll of Russia's war of aggression. The ministers noted that in return for supporting Russia, the DPRK is seeking military assistance to advance its own military objectives. They pointed out that arms transfers to or from the DPRK, as well as the transfer of dual-use technologies that could be used in the DPRK's WMD, ballistic missile, or conventional weapons programs, violate multiple UN Security Council resolutions. Russia itself, they observed, voted for the UN Security Council resolutions that contain these restrictions. Russia and the DPRK have made no secret of their burgeoning relationship. In September, Kim Jong-un traveled to Russia where the two leaders discussed military matters and toasted their friendship. In mid-October, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov met with Kim in Pyongyang. In their joint statement, the U.S., Japan, and the ROK expressed deep concern about the possibility of Russia's transferring any nuclear or ballistic missile technology to the DPRK. Such transfers, the ministers said, jeopardize the ongoing efforts of the international community to keep sensitive technologies out of the hands of actors who are working to destabilize regional security, threaten peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula, as well as across the globe. The United States, Japan, and the ROK stand together, they declared, resolute in our opposition to arms transfers and related military cooperation between the DPRK and Russia, and the deleterious effect such actions have on global security and non-proliferation.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.